Support for Newsworthy comes from Enlivion, providing affordable housing and supportive services to help build strong foundations for a better future for hardworking families, seniors, and the disabled in Charlotte. More information available at enlivion.com. And from Thrivent, a financial services company working with individuals and families to develop strategies for managing their money and planning for the future. More information at mark.hargrove@thrivent.com.
From 90.7 WFAE, this is Newsworthy for Monday, April 21st, 2025. I'm Eric Thiel. Bishop Michael Martin of the Charlotte Diocese has released a statement on the death of Pope Francis early this morning at the age of 88. Martin said in part, "I am deeply saddened by the death of Pope Francis and join with the Catholics of the Diocese of Charlotte and around the world in mourning the loss of our shepherd. There will be time to celebrate the life and legacy of Pope Francis in the days ahead. But for now, I invite anyone and everyone to join us in prayer." Martin was appointed by Pope Francis last year. He oversees 92 churches, 20 schools, and more than 50 ministries in Western North Carolina. Charlotte, Rock Hill, Huntersville, Raleigh, and Durham were among the Carolina cities that saw more protests of Trump administration policies over the weekend. The events were among 700 across the country organized by the 50-51 movement, a loosely organized group that began on Reddit with a push for 50 protests in 50 states on one day. More than 1,000 protesters gathered in Durham. The Rock Hill Herald reports hundreds gathered between Main and White Streets Saturday, demanding the state's leaders in Congress do something to keep the president in check. Local organizer Brian Ballard said there will be biweekly demonstrations going forward. Last time the protest drew between 450 and 500 people in Rock Hill, this weekend's event was even larger. The surviving victims from Thursday's deadly school bus crash on Interstate 77 have been released from area hospitals, according to Lexington 2 school district officials. The state newspaper reports Jose Maria Gonzalez Linares, a 13-year-old 8th-grade student at Pine Ridge Middle School, was killed when a tire blew out on the school bus carrying students home from a field trip to the Charlotte area. The bus overturned in Chester County. First responders found the teenager at the rear of the bus where he died of blunt force trauma, according to the Chester County coroner. Multiple injuries were reported, and overall 38 people involved in the crash were treated and evaluated at hospitals. U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents made arrests at an East Charlotte apartment complex Thursday without providing warrants to the property manager. Julian Berger was at the apartment complex where the arrests took place.
The arrest occurred at Buena Vida Apartments on Eastway Drive in East Charlotte. A property manager at the complex says she asked ICE agents to produce a warrant, but agents said they didn't have the warrants with them.
She did not have the warrant with her. Her supervisor had that information.
The agents entered the property to make arrests, then returned a couple of hours later and sat in the complex's parking lot.
I haven't seen a warrant, and they're just sitting here. I don't know what they're doing.
The property manager declined to give her name, fearing retaliation. ICE cannot enter a private home or apartment without consent or warrant signed by a judge. Later, the property manager said agents returned a third time with warrants and arrested more tenants. Julian Berger, WFAE News.
The city of Charlotte has announced new funding for projects aimed at revitalizing and reshaping public spaces. As Elvis Maniese reports, one group that feels left out of the city's corridors of opportunity says the funds are a way to bring beauty into the neighborhood.
The city plans to distribute $230,000 to 16 community-led projects. They include bus stop beautifications, murals, and sculptures. Transforming Nations Ford is one of the recipients. In March, the group hosted a community workshop aimed at creating their own Corridors of Opportunity playbook to improve their neighborhood.
We have to be proactive. We can't just wait for the city or the county to take note of us. And I think we're really building momentum.
That's Joy Mayo, the group's board chair. They plan to use the funds to add a mural near the intersection of Nations Ford and Kings Creek Drive that depicts young people enjoying nature. Mayo says the artwork is part of the initial efforts to address what neighbors say they want.
What we heard was beautification, being thoughtful of sidewalks, right? People were saying, well, some of the sidewalks, they can't travel along, those are conversations we have to start addressing.
The group hopes to have the mural on display by October. Elvis Meneyese, WFA News.
Educators from Elon University School of Law and UNC Greensboro are presenting a symposium on aspects of the rule of law today. WFDD's Paul Garber reports.
The event will address recent legal issues, both domestic and international. David Levine is Associate Dean of Faculty Development and Professor of Law at Elon and one of the symposium's moderators. He says among the topics likely to be discussed are the volume of executive orders coming from the White House and due process in the deportation case of Kilmer Abrego Garcia. Levine says while current events will be addressed, the symposium is not about politics.
The focus of this event is on what does the law do? How does the law operate? Where does the law work? Where does the law not work? And how does the judiciary and the law deal with some fairly unique challenges that are currently being faced by the United States?
Panelists include former state Supreme Court Chief Justice Sherry Beasley. The event will be held at Elon's Law School in downtown Greensboro. I'm Paul Garber.
Latinos of Catholic faith gathered in West Charlotte Friday to observe Good Friday. Julian Berger has more on the event's sights and sounds.
More than 1,000 people gathered at the parish Nuestra Señora de Guadalupe off of Tuckasegee Road to watch the Via Crucis, or the Way of the Cross. It's a devotional reenactment to honor the final hours of Jesus' life, from his condemnation to the death on the cross. Friday's reenactment featured live music, food, and sacrament gifts. Here's Father Bruce Krause of the parish.
As the actors proceed, they tell the story of Jesus' suffering, his passion, and his death on the cross. This is an expression of their profound faith and love for the Lord.
Nuestra Señora de Guadalupe was established in 2002 and has observed the Via Crucis for almost 10 years. Julian Berger, WFAE News.
Charlotte FC is now in first place in Major League Soccer's Eastern Conference after Saturday's 3-0 win over San Diego. The team has won all 5 home matches this season and 8 straight overall. Coach Dean Smith said after the win, his team is off to a good start, but knows there's still a long way to go.
I knew we're capable of winning games, to go, you know, 5 home games and win all 5 with the fixture list that came out as well. We've had some tough matches. But that's been really pleasing and pleasing for the crowd and supporters, for them to get behind us as well. But it's just 9 games, so we're well aware of that.
Charlotte hosts 11th place New England Saturday night at Bank of America Stadium. You've probably heard the term food desert to describe a place where residents have limited access to affordable, healthy foods. But what about a bank desert? That's where many residents have limited to no access to bank branches and are forced to rely on ATMs or to make a long drive. Such a desert is growing in the rural areas outside of Charlotte and even in some neighborhoods within the city. Reporter Catherine Muchagroso wrote about it for the Charlotte Observer and spoke with our Marshall Terry.
In your story, you cite data from the Carolinas Credit Union League showing North Carolina lost a quarter of its bank branches between 2013 and last year. That's about 650 branches. Why are branches disappearing?
For one thing, there's a shift toward more customers going online. There's not a service that most banks provide that you can't access financially through your mobile device. Another reason is that a bank branch has to be economically viable, of course. A bank branch can need about $30 million in deposits to cover a branch's expenses, such as technology, insurance, electricity, and staffing. That's what NC Bankers Association CEO Peter Gwaltney told me. And yet another reason, he explained, is that branches close because of mergers.
To find out how residents in bank deserts manage, you went to one. Anson County is about an hour southeast of Charlotte. How is the lack of branches affecting people there?
So Anson County has experienced one of the biggest decreases over the past decade at nearly 67% in bank closings in the Charlotte region. One of the biggest issues people talked about with me is the inconvenience of having to spend gas money and time driving to another city to get to their bank. Like a PNC branch, in Rockingham and the next county over. To be clear, there are two banks in Wadesboro, Truist and URE. There's also a branch of the State Employees Credit Union. Smaller towns in Anson, like Peachland and Lylesville, don't have any banking options. In fact, Ansonville is the only town outside of Wadesboro I could find that even had an ATM. Business owners and residents that I talked to said people need access to branches to talk with someone. It helps with financial literacy and making large bank deposits as business owners. And maybe even more importantly, what many people talked about is how banks help drive local economic growth and are a sign of community stability.
Now, is this unique to North Carolina, or is it happening in other states also?
It's happening in towns across America, and for the same reasons, mainly the advent and growth of online banking, branch viability costs, and mergers.
So is this just the new norm, kind of like how video rental stores largely no longer exist? Or is there any effort to bring branches back to some of these bank deserts?
North Carolina lawmakers are working on their own solution, which is credit unions. Banks and credit unions both offer similar services, but banks are for-profit companies, while credit unions are cooperatives owned by their members with a board of directors elected by those members. But typically, to join a credit union, eligibility requirements include where a person works or worships. The Carolina Credit Union League helped craft legislation that would allow credit unions to expand and accept any member who lives in a banking desert. But banks opposed the bill. They say it effectively converts credit unions into tax-exempt banks without having to pay the same fees or meet regulatory requirements that banks do. A trade-off for the credit union's tax-exempt status is that they can provide financial services just like a bank, but has membership requirements, is what the NC Bankers Association says. The bill also does not require credit unions to build physical branches. The NC Bankers Association has said it's exploring banking desert resolutions, including possibly shared branches or mobile units. But anything they do would require regulatory approval.
All right. Well, thanks for taking the time and joining me and talking about all that.
Thank you very much.
The restored Carolina Theater holds a special place in Charlotte's history. But Tommy Tomlinson, in his On My Mind commentary, says it's also a symbol of our potential now and in the future.
I went to the New Carolina Theater for the first time the other night. It's spectacular. But I'll be honest, until I actually walked through the doors and stepped onto the carpet, I wasn't 100% sure it was real. If you've lived in Charlotte for a while, you know that for decades, the Carolina Theater was a mirage that never quite came into focus. The old place had a great history. It opened in 1927 and hosted movies plus live shows from Elvis to Sinatra to Andy Griffith. The Sound of Music played there for 79 weeks straight. It closed in 1978. The last show there was the Bruce Lee film Fist of Fury. Every few years after that, somebody came up with a new plan to resurrect the Carolina Theater. Up through the mid-90s or so, the plans didn't even make that much sense. Back then, Uptown was so empty after 5 that you could drive through there blindfolded and not hit a soul. But then people started moving Uptown. We put a football stadium and an arena there. Crowds lingered after dark. But the theater still sat there empty, like an old rotten tooth too expensive to fix. Finally, in 2013, the city sold the building to the Foundation for the Carolinas for $1. It took 5 more years after that for the renovations to begin, and 7 more years after that for the theater to reopen. Now feels like the perfect time. The main library is being rebuilt one block over from the theater. Uptown life is booming in a way it hasn't in 50 years. All of this took money and influence, and some smart and powerful people working together. But beyond that, it took vision and belief. I have to say, at some point I figured I'd never see a new Carolina theater. It sounded like one of those political campaign promises that never gets fulfilled. Now, we have many harder and more important problems to solve in this city. But we still have the collective resources and willpower to solve those problems. It took nearly 50 years to restore the Carolina Theater to its glory. But in the end, we turned an eyesore into something beautiful.
Tommy Tomlinson's On My Mind represents his opinion, not the opinion of WFAE. You can also listen to Tommy's podcast, Southbound, where he interviews notable Southerners. And for Monday, April 21st, that's Newsworthy. I'm Eric Thiel.